Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Hello there, listeners, and welcome back to Horror Hill. I'm your host and narrator, Eric Peabody. Tonight, we have two stories to help chill your blood in this unreasonably warm summer. If we humans are going to keep raising the temperature, I guess the only way to fight it is with some truly chilling stories. To start, we'll be cracking into The Killing Moon by Ross Tyson. Heather is a college sophomore with a lot going for her. Her grades were so good that she managed to skip finals. She's with a great group of friends at a beach house in Florida, and her crush, Ryan, seems to be finally noticing her. What Heather doesn't know is that tonight there's an eclipse, and when the moon turns red along this stretch of the coast, something rather unpleasant comes out to play. Then we'll wrap things up with Emergency Broadcast 101 by Trace Mousey. Our narrator, Alex, recounts a series of strange events that occurred following an unexpected and alarming emergency TV broadcast. People are running in the streets, abandoning their families, the military has shown up, and the person knocking at Alex's door might not be who they're claiming to be. So, give me just one moment to pop open this tiny umbrella in my drink. There we are. Now, let's hit the beach, shall we? You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author Ross Tyson, I give you The Killing Moon. The sun baked the pavement under their feet as they ran towards the waiting sand, trying not to stay in one place too long lest they get burned. It was already hot, and it was only May, but it gave them perfect beach weather to get the summer started. For some of them, their last summer.
"Why the hell did I leave the house with no shoes?"
Heather shouted as they finally reached the edge of the pavement, sliding into the sand.
"You said it wasn't that long of a walk from the cabin."
"It's not a long walk,"
Alice shouted back, falling over into the soft sand and looking at her friend,
She pointed behind them to the cabin, only about 200 feet away.
"That trip's a hell of a lot longer when you're walking on fire," Justin said, covering his feet in sand.
He looked around them, taking count of their group. There were only five of them.
"Where's Ryan?"
They all looked back toward the cabin to see Ryan walking calmly across the pavement, whistling and swinging a towel around at his side as he walked. His sandals clapped against the soles of his feet. The rest of the group groaned.
"What? Not my fault, y'all are dumbasses," he said, shrugging at them.
He walked past them toward the water, swinging the towel around his shoulders as he went. Heather looked over at Alice, who gave her a knowing smile and nodded at her to follow him. Heather was hoping this was her chance. She had been head over heels for Ryan since they first met in freshman biology a year ago. They had become friends during study group, and a month ago, Ryan had told them of his plans to go to his family's beach cabin for 2 weeks in May, inviting all of them along. They had gotten here early that morning and quickly rushed to get everything unpacked to hit the beach. It was private land right along the Florida coast. Ryan's family was well off, and the only neighbors nearby were the other two cabins that were at least 500 yards away from either side of theirs, and even then, those were empty this time of year. The six of them, Ryan, Justin, Heather, Alice, Sam, and Darren, had been able to finish the semester early and get out of most of their finals since they kept a good average. This was the vacation they needed. Heather ran to catch up with Ryan, then decided to run straight past him and right into the water. She wasn't ready for how cold it was, and quickly did a 180 and ran back up the beach into the warm sand, shouting in surprise. The rest of them laughed at her as she ran back to the group. Darren and Sam spread a blanket out and settled in together to sunbathe, taking in the warmth of the Florida sun. Justin and Alice ran into the waves, not caring about the cold. Alice tackled him into an oncoming rush of water as they went deeper in, laughing as they fell. Heather sat beside Ryan. He was spreading his towel out and setting up an umbrella.
"So you got to come here every year as a kid?"
she asked him, looking around. She still couldn't believe how secluded the place was for being at such a prime beach spot. Everything out here was beautiful, unlike the beach near her hometown that looked like a radioactive dump most of the year. The water here was actually semi-clear, where you could see down into it and watch as the fish swam by.
"Yeah, Mom and Dad never got out here much because of work, but Grandma used to bring me every year.
Mom gave me the keys last year after Grandma died. Guess that was easier for her to do than actually grieve."
"Shit, I'm so sorry,"
Heather said, taken aback by the honesty he was showing. Ryan was usually the goofball of the group, almost never showing any kind of vulnerability. He looked off into the distance where the sea met the sky, and she could swear she saw a tear in the corner of his eye.
Mom's always been a bitch anyway," he said, shrugging. "Besides, doubt they would want to come out here after what happened when she was a kid. She didn't even like the thought of this place."
"What do you mean?" Heather asked. She could hear Alice yelling at Justin in the background, telling him to stop splashing her or else she would drown him. "Supposedly, when Mom was a teenager, they were staying here for a weekend and some of the neighbors were murdered in that cabin," he said, pointing down the beach to the other house in the distance. Apparently, it was pretty grisly, enough blood that the house was basically painted red when they found it.
"Holy shit, that's insane! Did they ever catch the guy that did it?"
She was trying to stay cool, but her morbid curiosity got the better of her, and this was the most Ryan had talked to her in weeks, so she wasn't letting it go. "Nope, there was just a note written by one of the murdered women that said, 'All I see is red.' Nothing ever came of it, no suspects, no leads, nothing." Ryan shrugged and looked over at her. "Then again, it was Florida in the 60s. Probably a bunch of kids that tripped on LSD and started stabbing each other."
"That's insane," Heather said as she looked over toward the cabin.
One of the windows was broken, and it looked like there hadn't been a living thing there in years. She couldn't blame anyone for not wanting to go in. They sat in silence for a while, watching Alice and Justin splashing around in the waves. After a couple of hours, they all went back inside, getting ready for the night ahead, preparing dinner and starting on the booze they brought with them. It wasn't long before they were all buzzed and sitting out by a fire they made on the sand near the cabin.
"Shit, I forgot! There's supposed to be an eclipse tonight!"
Darren said, lying back in the sand and looking up at the sky. The moon hung high above them, full and large, reflecting the light of a long-gone sundown onto the waters in front of them. Heather didn't think she had ever seen the moon look that large in her whole life.
"Wow, we're going to see a full eclipse?"
Sam asked, laying down next to Darren.
"That's going to be so romantic."
"They call it a blood moon because of how the light reflects off during the eclipse, causes the moon to be red for a few minutes. Apparently it looks really cool and hasn't happened around this part of the States in a long time,"
Darren replied, putting his arm around Sam and bringing her closer to him. Heather looked over at Ryan, giving him a furtive smile. Maybe that would help her chances of getting close to him tonight. They were the only single people here, after all. They would need to stick together. She was surprised to see that the color had drained from his face, and he looked worried.
"Hey,"
she nudged him and said quietly,
"are you all right?"
"We need to leave,"
Ryan said, standing up and nearly tripping into the fire. He had been downing drinks most of the afternoon and definitely wasn't in a position to make rational decisions. The others all looked at him in surprise.
"Whoa, man, just chill,"
Justin said, getting up and putting a hand on his shoulder, steadying him.
"What's going on?"
"We have to leave. It's not safe here."
Ryan slurred his words. He was obviously drunk and not in the right state of mind. Heather took his arm.
"I'll take him up to the cabin. I think he's just had too much too quickly,"
she said, looking at the rest of them. They all agreed, telling Ryan goodnight and to get some rest. Heather hoisted his arm over her shoulders, trying to support him. They began the march to the cabin. Ryan mumbled most of the way there, and when they got through the door, she hurried to get him over to the couch and set him down. He continued to protest that they needed to leave. Heather gave him a stern look.
"Ryan Hollison, it was your idea to come out here for the next few days. Why do you suddenly want to leave?"
she said, looking at him.
"I'm so sorry,"
he slurred, only half awake.
"I'm just drunk. Just drunk, thinking about old stories Grandma used to tell me."
"Like what?"
"The red,"
he said simply, looking towards the nearest window. The moon shone bright outside, illuminating the beach beyond.
"The red comes out during the blood moon."
"Yeah, the moon turns red, we know that."
She gave a small chuckle. He was unbelievably drunk, and she actually found it kind of cute how concerned he was about all of them. He actually cared. She turned in the direction he was looking, seeing the shadow of the earth begin moving across the moon.
"Oh, it's starting! I didn't think it would be so early."
"God help us,"
Ryan said, then leaned over the side of the couch and promptly vomited on the floor.
"Oh, shit. Hold on, I'll get a towel."
Heather ran to the trash can, putting it under Ryan as he heaved once more. She went into the linen closet, grabbing the first towel she saw, and threw it over the puddle on the floor.
"All right, you're cut off for the rest of the trip after this. It's only day one."
A scream came from the direction of the beach. She looked outside but couldn't see anything but the red moon hanging over the ocean, making it look like a sea of blood washing ashore. She assumed it was one of the guys scaring the girls, their usual pranks. Ryan finished emptying his stomach and sat up, looking over at her. He suddenly looked completely sober, giving her a serious look as he attempted to stand, pointing to the cabin door that was still open.
"Close that and lock it," he said seriously. The edge in his voice could have cut through bone.
He was scared, but she didn't know what he was so frightened of.
"Why? What's wrong?"
She was cut off before she could even ask by Sam, Justin, and Alice running into the cabin and slamming the door behind them. She saw a red handprint on the door where Sam had grabbed it.
"Oh my God, he's dead! He's fucking dead!"
Alice screamed wildly, a manic look in her eyes. Heather looked at them all, trying to size up the situation and figure out what the hell was going on. Sam was shaking, her eyes looking forward but not seeing anything that was there. Heather noticed that the front of her clothes were smeared with red.
Jesus Christ, what was happening? Lock the door,
Ryan said, looking at them all in turn. He stood up, walking over to the kitchen and rummaging through the drawers, finally pulling out a large chef's knife and a meat cleaver.
Lock the fucking door!
Alice, take the knife. Justin, you take the cleaver. Sam, Heather, there are bats in the closet. Grab them.
What the fuck is going on?
Heather looked at Ryan with fear in her eyes and a tremble in her voice.
What happened to Darren?
We were all just sitting around the fire. We looked up to see the eclipse, then we felt something spray on us. I looked back and there was a man standing behind Darren and...
Oh fuck, there was so much blood.
Justin was babbling at this point. Heather ran over to lock the door and looked out toward the beach as she did so. She could see a crumpled frame laying by the fire and a large figure walking toward the cabin. She slammed the door and turned the deadbolt, then hurried away and behind the kitchen counter next to Ryan. She had never been this scared in her life, not even when she had been in a car crash in high school. This was a new kind of terror she had never felt. She knew she could die tonight.
Fucking hell, Ryan, you goddamn idiot!
Ryan was muttering to himself as he rummaged around the kitchen more, looking for any other weapons they could use. He was stone cold sober at this point, a totally different person than the boy slurring his words 10 minutes ago.
All right, we've got to get out of here.
Ryan, what the hell is going on?
Alice screamed, sobbing. She was breaking, almost hysterical. Tears streaming down her face left tracks in the spray of blood, running their way from her cheeks to her neck.
It's the eclipse. Grandma always told me stories growing up about how we should never be out here during a blood moon. She said there was something evil about this place that only showed up when the moon was red as the blood of its victims.
Ryan responded, finally finding what he was looking for. He grabbed the car keys from the corner of the kitchen where they had been thrown that morning, motioning for everyone to gather around him in the living room and looking at them in turn.
I'm sorry. I thought they were all just stories. I wouldn't have come here if I knew what tonight was. It's the one thing that Grandma constantly made sure that I knew. I think it's what happened to the people in the cabin next door, he said.
Now, we're going to run to the car. Whatever this thing is, it isn't human. It may have been once, but right now it's only focused on killing. We have to get out of here.
Heather's mind raced. This was it. This was the red that the note was about. They were going to die here. She snapped out of her thoughts when there was a loud thump on the door.
It's probably Darren,
Sam said, running to the door.
He's fucking dead, Sam!
Ryan screamed, chasing after her and attempting to tackle her to the ground. He wasn't quick enough, and she opened the door before he could get there. Darren's lifeless body fell through the door, his head almost severed from the large gash in his neck. In the doorway stood an imposing figure, at least 6.5 feet tall, dressed all in black. It wore a plain wolf's head mask over its face. It was a deep crimson, but they couldn't tell if it was painted or if it was from layers of blood that had been spilled on it. The red lunged forward, grabbing Sam by the throat and pulling its other arm back. Heather saw a large, twisted blade, almost like a sickle that had been forged, then twisted around. It lifted Sam into the air and drove the blade through her stomach and up into her chest. She screamed for a moment, then silently gurgled. Blood poured to the floor, splashing their feet. Alice screamed once more.
Back door! Run!
Ryan shouted, pushing Heather in front of him toward the back of the cabin.
Get out there, then circle around to the car. Go!
They ran. Heather first, Ryan right behind her. Justin and Alice brought up the rear, clinging together as they ran, almost dragging each other. Alice had stopped screaming and instead was sobbing maniacally, alternating between begging for God's mercy and saying they were all going to die. Heather barged through the door, almost tripping on the threshold as she burst outside. The warm night air hit her, the stinging smell of salt water coming off the ocean not far from them. She ran around the corner of the house and toward the driveway where Ryan's SUV was parked. She looked behind her to see Ryan right on her heels, while Alice was just coming through the door. Ryan tossed her the keys.
"Get it going! I'm going to try to buy us some time!"
he shouted. She nodded and kept running, throwing open the door and jumping into the driver's seat. She turned the key in the ignition, but was only met with silence.
"Shit! Ryan, it won't start!"
He let out a swear and ran back over to her. She scrambled over to the passenger seat as he climbed in, looking around and trying the keys again. There was still no sound from the engine. He leaned down to see if he could jumpstart the car and saw the wires slashed. Frantically, he tried grabbing them and attempting to jumpstart the car anyway.
"Alice, go!"
she heard Justin screaming from behind the house. Alice turned the corner, running full on toward the car. She saw Justin round the corner right after her, then get violently jerked back behind the house. There was a sickening splash and a spray of crimson onto the sand nearby, and then an object came sailing through the air. Justin's head landed squarely on the windshield, sending a spiderweb of cracks through it. His eyes were still staring, and Heather could swear his mouth moved a bit, almost as if begging for help. Blood leaked from the mangled stump of his neck.
"No!"
Alice shrieked, stopping in her tracks. She was almost right in front of the car, the red light reflecting off the moon bathing her in an eerie glow. She broke down and fell to her knees, letting out an agonizing scream that tore through Heather's very soul, a sound she would remember for the rest of her life. The red was slowly coming towards her, a determined lumbering. It lifted the blade in its hand, hefting it high above its head. Alice turned, screaming at it, telling it to leave her alone, to go to hell, to give her Justin back. Her screams fell on deaf, uncaring ears. The only thing the red cared about was seeing blood.
"Jesus Christ!"
Ryan said, furiously tapping wires together. After a moment, the car sparked to life, headlights illuminating the killer, just as he brought the blade down on Alice, stabbing her between her shoulder and neck, driving it down into her lungs. Heather saw the crimson tip of the blade poke through her side.
"How long has it been?"
Ryan asked, looking at Heather. She didn't understand what he was saying. He cranked the car and looked back at her.
"How long? How long since the eclipse started?"
I don't know," Heather said.
They had been inside when it began, so she wasn't sure of the exact time. It had to have been going on at least a few minutes now.
"Why does it matter? We need to get out of here."
"When the moon is red, it will come for the dead," Ryan muttered. "Beware the blood moon, for death will follow soon."
"Ryan, we have to go!"
Heather shouted. The red was standing in front of the car, basking in the glow from the headlights. It was struggling to remove the blade from Alice's body. Her head bobbed back and forth as it tried to twist the weapon free.
"That's what Grandma always told me growing up. I think it'll go away once the total eclipse is finished,"
Ryan said, looking around them.
"Listen, I've always liked you. I'm sorry I've been distant. Things haven't been easy since she died."
Heather stared at him, mouth open in surprise. Of all the times he could be confessing his love, why now? He leaned over and kissed her lightly.
"I'm going to distract it. Maybe I'll survive long enough. You need to get out of here and go find someone. Bring them here. If I don't make it, make sure this entire fucking place is burned down. Make sure nobody ever comes here again. Please."
Before she could protest, he got out of the car. The red had finally gotten the blade free from Alice, lifting its boot and planting it on her face as he pulled the blade free. Heather realized she was crying as Ryan screamed at the thing, telling it to come get him. He backed off toward the beach, attempting to make it chase him out to the water. Heather moved over to the driver's seat as the red turned toward Ryan, cocking its head to the side slightly. She wasn't just going to leave him here. She couldn't. She reached down to the gear shift and threw it into reverse, backing a few dozen feet toward the road.
She quickly moved the car into drive and revved the engine, waiting for the red to line up perfectly with the front of the vehicle. Once it was there, she throttled the gas, gaining as much speed as possible. She hit the thing with a sickening thud. It was thrown almost 30 feet to the sand, rolling to a stop just short of the waves. Ryan looked back at her, amazement on his face. She got out of the car and ran to him.
"I can't just leave you, not after you pull that shit," she said, screaming at him as she got closer.
He hugged her close, thanking her. She looked back towards the water, scanning the tides for the body.
"We have to call someone. Do you have a phone?" she asked, looking at Ryan.
"I have a cell in the center console of the car," he replied, looking around them. They began running back towards the car, keeping an eye out for the killer. The moon still hung low above them, but it was now more of a rust color than the crimson it had been before. Heather jumped back into the driver's seat as Ryan went to the passenger side. He immediately opened the console and pulled out a phone.
"All right, I'm calling the cops," he said. "I think the eclipse is almost up."
He was cut off by the blade flying through the windshield. It impaled itself into his left eye, his right eye going wide as he choked on his last words. His brain attempted to fire off any unmanaged neurons, but all it did was overload him. He convulsed for a moment before falling forward, dead. Heather looked forward through the shards of broken glass. The red was standing there, right where the waves reached their limit. She could swear it was smiling at her as blood dripped from it, leaving crimson tendrils where the waves took the streams back out into the ocean. She felt emotions overtake her. She didn't realize what she was doing. She felt rage at the thing that had just killed her friends in such a short amount of time. Grief over the loss of Ryan, of everyone. She had loved him, and just found out that he felt the same about her, only for that to be taken in an instant. She didn't realize she was on the accelerator until she was barreling toward the red, the light from the moon reflecting off the water, turning it to a sea of blood. She was almost upon it when the moonlight turned to silver once more, almost blinding her with its bright and sudden change. The red exploded, leaving behind a shimmering mass of crimson blood where it once stood. She drove through it and into the waves, causing water and viscera to mix and splash through the shattered glass. She was thrown forward by the impact of hitting the water. Her head hit the steering wheel, and the world disappeared.
You've been listening to The Killing Moon by Ross Tyson. Ross Tyson is a writer, parent, and cat wrangler living on the southeast Georgia coast, mostly known for posting stories as Googly Eyes 93 on No Sleep. They enjoy dipping into sci-fi and fantasy on occasion as well with their ongoing series Strays and Between Sunless Seas. Now, to close our episode, here's Emergency Broadcast 101 by Trace Mousy. Emergency Broadcast 101, do not leave your area. That's all the TV would play, the same message on repeat. Emergency Broadcast 101 was at the top, and Do Not Leave Your Area was printed small but clearly visible at the bottom. There was no explanation, no prior warnings. It just happened. I live in a small town. The next city is miles away. The broadcast said not to leave the area, but people were already rushing off in their cars. Some even left their families behind in a panic. That confused me. Everyone I knew here would never act like that. Something bad was happening. It's 1 a.m. I should mention the moon isn't out tonight, probably hidden behind the clouds. I decided not to follow the crowd and stayed home instead. Not even 20 minutes later, it seemed I'd made the right decision. My buddy was one of the people who left. He sent me a video on Snapchat of him getting pulled over. But it wasn't the police. It was the military.
In the last 5 seconds of the video, he stops his car. Then an armored truck pulls up behind him and armed guards rush out with big guns, screaming at him to get out. The video ends quickly. He hasn't responded to any of my texts. Whatever's going on, it's more serious than any of us thought. The military is taking extreme measures to make sure no one leaves. I'd like to describe the fear I'm experiencing, but I don't even want to think about it. The situation is already beyond terrifying. I only woke up a little while ago and everything's already falling apart. As I scroll online trying to find more information, a knock at the door interrupts me. It's my neighbor. He speaks softly through the door. "Hey, Alex, could you let me in, please?" Instinctively, I was about to open the door and let him in, but I stopped. The tone in his voice was off. He was too calm. Why was he so calm? Why was there no urgency, no context? Why did he want in? Why come to my house? Why leave his own just to come here? Wait, that's not right. I remember seeing him leave earlier, alone, without his family. He shouldn't be here. Who is that at the door? I backed away. Something was wrong. He started speaking again, but this time I couldn't understand a single word. It wasn't his voice anymore. It was sharp whispering. But the whispers didn't say anything. They weren't words, just a noise. It sounded like someone trying to call a cat over. I backed away from the door and hid. I tried to call 911, but the call wouldn't go through. I tried again, and it rang. Someone picked up. 911, what's your emergency? For a moment, I felt a sense of relief. I explained everything in a panic. Please help me. I don't know what's going on. The military's here. My neighbor isn't acting right. I don't know what to do. Okay, slow down, she said. Explain one thing at a time, please. I told her everything the best I could. When I finished, she went silent for a second. Then she spoke. Okay, I'm going to need you to stay calm. Where are you in your house? I told her I was hiding in the kitchen, crouched behind the table, away from the windows with the lights off. Okay, units are on the way. Stay put. Hearing that brought a wave of relief. Thank you so much, I said, feeling a little safer. You're welcome, Alex, she replied. Please stay on the phone. I hung up. My stomach dropped. I didn't tell her my name. I realized, in horror, that I hadn't been talking to a real 911 dispatcher. Looking back, it was a stupid move. Why would the police even help if the military were already here? Her lack of questions and calmness should have been a warning. I know 911 dispatchers are supposed to remain calm, but there wasn't a hint of worry or concern in her tone. It was almost robotic in a weird way. I might have just gotten myself killed. If whatever's out there didn't already know where I was before, it knows now. I have to get out of here. It's not safe. I texted my other friend to see if he was still in the area. He replied 2 minutes later. Thank God, I thought. He's still in the area. I asked if I could call. 1 minute later, my phone rang. As I was packing up my stuff, I answered. What the fuck is going on? He asked. I know as much as you do, I replied. Whatever's happening, we can't stay. His tone shifted, more worried now. Dude, the military is fucking everywhere. If whatever's out there doesn't kill us, the military will. I've seen enough movies to know that if they're keeping people contained, they'll kill you without question if you try to leave. He's right. I'll be over soon. Just be careful and go grab your gun, I told him. Okay, be safe, all right? I paused for a moment. Hey, what's my birthday? Seriously, dude, you really think I'm one of those things? He replied.
You're 17. You don't own a gun. Your parents are Democrats. They're anti-gun, I said. Things were silent for a minute, and then he spoke. Have you ever heard someone cry and scream, beg for the pain to stop, as you dig deep into the side of their torso with your claws and teeth? I froze. Of course not, he continued, but I'm sure I can paint you a picture or give you a visual representation. You can't run. Just lie down and give in, Alex. The call ended, and a sudden, sickening realization hit me. I could trust no one. That's 3 times now I'd been interacting with someone, or something, pretending to be someone else. Whatever this thing is, it can mimic people almost perfectly. My house is big, too big for one person to live in. I enjoy having large spaces all to myself. That means plenty of places for me to hide, but also plenty of places for something else to hide. I finally understood just how dangerous the situation really was. I grabbed my gun, a SIG P365, and began clearing the house, locking every possible entrance as I went. Every room was empty, every window and door secured. That made me feel a bit safer, though I realized if I needed to escape quickly, I might have boxed myself in. All the blinds were closed, so nothing could see inside. Every light was off. The house was dead silent. With my phone in hand, I tried to make sense of what was happening. But then I heard it. A vehicle pulled up outside on the main road. It was armored. I didn't know whether to feel scared or relieved, but either way, I prepared myself. 2 soldiers jumped out and immediately began firing their weapons at something. I couldn't see what they were shooting at, but it didn't matter, because whatever they were firing at was probably no different than what was behind them. The driver shouted to warn them, but it was too late. The thing behind them grabbed the 1st soldier and lifted him off the ground, its jaw unhinged. The 2nd soldier turned, ready to fire, but he never got the chance. In the blink of an eye, the creature... These things didn't just move fast. They moved so fast it looked like they were teleporting. The 1st soldier screamed, thrashing in its grasp, but it was no use. The creature pulled him toward its gaping jaw and ripped his head off. Its teeth were razor sharp. It started tearing the body apart like it was made of soft clay. The 2nd soldier's fate was worse. At least the 1st guy died instantly when his head was ripped off. The 2nd soldier wasn't so lucky. The creature forced his mouth open and jammed its fingers inside, applying pressure until his jaw broke off completely. It wasn't clean. The jaw tore from the flesh, leaving a mangled mess of blood and shredded muscle on the ground. Then, the thing threw the soldier's body to the floor. Somehow, he was still alive. Barely. It dragged him into the darkness, his torn throat letting out weak attempts at a scream. But I imagine you can't scream that well when your jaw's gone. I should mention that the man in the vehicle disappeared. No, I mean he literally vanished. I don't know how I didn't notice it. I assume the creatures got him, too. The whole thing lasted maybe a minute. I barely got a good look at the creatures. All I can tell you is that they were tall, probably around 9 feet, but that's just an estimate. All that remained was the military vehicle and blood scattered across the road. Have you ever been trapped in a dream? A nightmare you're aware of, but you can't wake up from. You start to feel an inevitable dread, like you'll never escape. Like you'll live the rest of your life in constant fear, forever trapped in that nightmare. That fear is exactly what I felt. I didn't see a way out. But the vehicle was still running, Maybe I could escape. Maybe the military wouldn't see me as just a civilian. Wait, this might actually work. When my dad passed away, I kept his military uniform. If I could just blend in, maybe I could slip past them. I quietly tiptoed upstairs and opened the closet. The uniform fit surprisingly well. It didn't look like what the soldiers were wearing. They had tactical gear, heavy vests, and probably newer models. But I looked close enough. Close enough might be all I needed. I couldn't sit here and wait to die. It was either die in the house or probably die trying to escape. I loaded my gun and got ready to leave. That's when I heard tapping from the kitchen window. I froze. My blood turned to ice. It won't be so bad. Just open the window. It won't hurt, a voice said. It wasn't just unsettling. It was wrong. Distorted. Too calm. I had no idea what it meant by that, but I ignored it. I know you're in there. I can feel your heartbeat. Your fear. It spoke again. Same voice. Same disturbing calmness. Okay, how about this? Just open the blinds. You don't even have to fully open them. Just enough to see outside. Then I'll leave you alone. Promise. That tone made my stomach twist. Against every ounce of sense I had, I made a very stupid choice. I crept toward the kitchen, crouched down, and cracked the blinds. What I saw made me stumble back and nearly vomit. It was one of the soldiers, probably the driver. His head, torso, and jaw were still intact, but barely. That confirmed it was the driver. His eyes had been gouged out, thick streams of blood running from the sockets. A portion of the top of his head was gone, as if he'd taken a shotgun blast to the skull. But his torso was the worst part. He had no arms, no legs, just the upper body. And the limbs weren't torn off. They were removed. Carefully, but violently. Jagged bones jutted out from the stumps like broken sticks, as if the removal had been deliberate. Then I saw the creature's hand. It held the body by the head with long, sharp claws. I couldn't see much besides its arm reaching down from the shadows. Its legs were hidden in the dark. It made the body dance like a puppet. The limbs flopped around, lifeless, as the creature manipulated the soldier's corpse in a grotesque mockery of movement. Was this just to torment me? Was it a message? I didn't understand. I didn't want to. I slammed the blinds shut and dropped to the floor, gagging. And then I puked, violently. I had to get out, and quickly. But I couldn't just yet. I had to wait, hoping it would leave. I remembered something. It mentioned it could feel my heartbeat, my fear. I started doing breathing exercises to calm my heartbeat down. Surprisingly, it worked. I was calm. Well, as calm as a person could be in such a fucked up situation. I decided it was time to leave. I grabbed my things and left through the side door of my house, not the front. The front door was too loud and too predictable as an exit. As I stepped outside, trying to be as quiet as possible, I quickly remembered to silence my phone, just in case. But when I pulled it out, I saw something in the trees behind my house. One of them wasn't a tree. It was that thing. I didn't wait. I ran to the vehicle, praying it hadn't seen me. I jumped inside and floored it. I was out of the main part of town in 5 minutes, flying down the road at 90 miles per hour. The radio was on, filled with frantic, panicked voices. I couldn't make out much, but one thing stood out. Every engagement with these creatures had ended in death. Then something else came through.
A voice mentioned a survival book, one issued to each soldier, a guide with everything they knew about these things. As I gripped the wheel, I glanced over at the passenger seat, and there it was, a worn, olive-colored manual stamped with the words, "Authorized Use Only, Survival Guide, Mimics." I had a decision to make. I could either keep driving, uninformed, and risk running into another one of them, or stop and read, hoping to learn something that could keep me alive. I was sure I had drawn attention already. I decided to keep driving until I was far enough away. They were fast, but I didn't know if they were this fast. Eventually, they'd have to stop and rest. Unlike them, I had a vehicle, and the gas tank was full. There were a lot of weird controls inside, but I could handle the basics, or so I thought. After 10 more minutes of driving, I passed another armored vehicle. They didn't stop me. That was a good sign. Finally, I pulled over. The outside was pitch black. I could see nothing except what the headlights lit up. I grabbed the survival guide from the passenger seat, and I began to read. The first few pages were full of legal jargon, clearly written by the government. Most of it talked about how the public was not to read the contents of this book under any circumstances. If someone did manage to get a copy, the official response was to play it off as a, quote, role-play prop made to, quote, generate spooky thrills. Then came a disturbing section about what to do if the civilian didn't believe the lie. It explained how to eliminate them quietly, without being caught. After more red tape and bureaucratic filler, I finally reached something useful. Threat level. World ending. Creature classification. Mimic. Section 1. Survival. Origins. Unknown. When possibly encountering a mimic, use L-O-R-H-A, Lorha. Listen. Listen to how the person speaks. If the tone is off or lacks human emotion, you are likely speaking to a mimic. Pay attention to both large and subtle details in what they say. If anything contradicts the known life of the person they are imitating, or they mention information they shouldn't know, assume you are dealing with a mimic. Observe. Watch for unnatural features. Signs include red eyes, uncanny or asymmetrical facial structure, elongated limbs, no fingernails, no breathing, no genitalia, missing toes, hairless arms and legs. Run. If possible, run. Mimics are extremely fast, but fleeing is safer than hiding or fighting. Use zigzag movement. This has worked against newer mimics in the past. Be warned, older mimics are not easily fooled. Hide. Only hide if escape is impossible. Newer mimics are more common and easier to evade. However, mimics are designed to seek. They can hear heartbeats, breathing, and even the subtle clicking of your eyes when you blink. Newer mimics may overlook you if you remain still and quiet. Older mimics will find you. Escape the area if possible. Attack. Engage only as a last resort. New mimics may be harmed, but bullets are largely ineffective. Older mimics cannot be harmed with standard weapons. If you are out of options, take your issued pill and lie down. If you believe the mimic will reach you before the pill works, load your weapon and shoot yourself. If anybody is near you, shoot them, then yourself, if you can in time. You will be sparing them, and yourself, a worse fate. Section 2. Information. Newer mimics. Height, 7 to 11 feet, can alter size at will. Mimicking behavior is sloppy and easily detectable. Tend to taunt and frighten victims before attacking. Less violent and less effective at deception. Do not yet understand how to kill effectively. Cannot interfere with signals like phones, radios, or televisions. Note: fire appears to be effective against newer mimics, though they can regenerate. Do not attempt to kill them. Use any injury as an opportunity to escape. older mimics. Height, 9 to 15 feet, capable of changing size at will. Mimicking is flawless, nearly impossible to distinguish from actual humans. They do not taunt. They torture. Testing has shown that older mimics experience brain activity similar to humans on drugs when inflicting pain. They enjoy it. Older mimics are extremely violent and develop natural knowledge of human anatomy. They instinctively understand how to inflict maximum pain without killing. They can interfere with any signal. Recent incidents confirm interference with aircraft systems and long-range transmissions. There is currently no known method to harm older mimics. Regeneration ability is unknown, as no damage has yet been inflicted. If confronted with an older mimic, use Lorha. Pray it works. If capture is imminent, shoot yourself. Your pill will not act quickly enough. Note: descriptions of both newer and older mimics and their true forms are classified and will remain confidential until further notice.
Everything else in the book was redacted. I guess the clearance level wasn't high enough, not even for the soldiers who were supposed to use this thing.
I don't get it. Did they not read the damn guide? It told them not to attack. They ignored it and opened fire anyway. They could have just driven off. Unless
they were blocked in.
I mean, the book made it clear that these things, these mimics, are extremely durable. Even then, though, they fought like they were trying to kill the thing. I tried not to dig too deep into it. I was getting ready to drive off when I noticed something. Something bad. My tires were flat.
No fucking way, I whispered to myself. Someone or something had slashed them. I didn't dare step outside. I turned the vehicle off and prayed. My prayer didn't last long. The driver's door was torn off. A massive hand reached in, trying to grab me. I fired my gun before it could. The only thought I had in that split second was how impossibly huge its hand was. The mimic screeched. It was so loud my eardrums burst. Blood poured from both ears. My balance vanished, and I wasn't even standing. I couldn't sit up straight or anything, just squirm in intense pain. I couldn't even process what was happening. But one thing came back to me in that moment. Fire was effective. If it was a newer mimic, I might be able to escape, or hurt it enough that it would leave, even though the book said otherwise. Regardless, I had no choice. I had no chance of running. I could barely sit upright. Then I saw it. The soldiers had been prepared after all. In the back of the vehicle was a container of oil and a box of matches. I reached for them through the pain. My ears were screaming. My vision spun. Just as I grabbed both, something yanked me from the vehicle. My arm snapped on impact. I screamed. I don't cry often, but I broke down right then and there. The box of matches stayed clutched in my good hand somehow. The oil had spilled out, pooling around the mimic's feet. And for the first time, I saw its face. It had long, needle-like teeth, a mouth so wide its skin, if it even was skin, looked torn around the edges. Its eye sockets were stretched open, but the eyes were barely there, just two tiny white dots. I couldn't see much else. The thing blended into the darkness, and the headlights were off. I couldn't be sure the oil had even reached its legs. That was a guess, a desperate one. It threw me down again, and I hit the ground with my broken arm. The pain was beyond anything I've ever felt. I wanted to lie there and just give up. But I didn't. I clenched a match between my teeth and struck it against the box. The mimic lifted me high by the legs. It was going to kill me, or worse, torture me. Through blurred vision, I clenched the match between my teeth and attempted to light it. After a bit of trial and error, I managed to strike it. It lit, and I dropped it. I had no idea if it would have any effect, My gun was still in the vehicle, far out of reach. But by some miracle, some fucking miracle, the flame touched the oil. It had spilled onto the ground when I dropped it after all. And it ignited. The mimic dropped me. I hit the ground head first. And everything went black. I woke up in a hospital. The doctor told me I had been in a bad car crash. I tried explaining what had really happened. I told him everything. About the mimics, the military, the survival book, the fire, the blood. The voice at the window. He looked at me with confusion and told me my brain had suffered severe trauma. According to him, what I had experienced was most likely a hallucination caused by my injuries. But I knew what I saw. I knew what I felt. I looked for my phone. Thankfully, it was on the table next to my bed. My head throbbed and my arm ached, but I reached for it anyway. I tried texting my friend, but got no reply. It was as if he didn't exist. I checked my call log to make sure I wasn't losing my mind, but there was nothing. No record of any calls. No 911, no messages. No recent activity at all. I checked my blocked contacts, checked my deleted folder. Still, nothing. I was starting to think I really had gone crazy. But I knew better. This hadn't been just a dream. It couldn't have been. My suspicions were confirmed when the doctor told me I had a visitor claiming to be a loved one. An older man walked in and greeted me with a smile like we'd known each other for years. He politely asked the doctor to give us some privacy. And the moment we were alone, his expression changed. "You saw things," he said. "You experienced things you were never supposed to. Your old life in that town is gone. Everyone you once knew and interacted with is gone, and it's highly likely that they're dead. You'll be relocated to a new town. Your belongings have been retrieved, don't worry. You are not to speak of this to anyone. You're lucky to be alive, and extremely lucky we decided to keep you alive when we found you. Thanks to you, we discovered a new weakness in the mimics. A simple gunshot to the hand. That was all it took. You successfully killed one. We know you read the book. Yes, fire is effective. The oil and match trick was smart. But the gunshot to the hand is what did it. We've never been able to study a mimic corpse. They're far too durable. But the one you killed gave us something. There is an artery located in the direct center of the palm that appears to be vital to their organ functions. Because you discovered this, we are going to let you live. He stared directly into my eyes. But if we find out that you told anyone about this situation, you will be killed, as will the person you told. You are to sign this contract. He handed me a pen and a document. I hope to never meet you again. Thank you for your time. Oh, and do not bother attempting to contact your friends. You will not be able to. Let's just leave it at that. I signed the contract without saying a word. I mean, what else could I say? But something was still gnawing at me. The friend I had called. Every time I saw him, his eyes were red. His face always looked just a little off, and now that I think about it, his arms and legs never had any hair. Not once. He had been my friend since I moved into that town 5 years ago. But how long had I been talking to a mimic? I don't think it matters anymore. They'll probably kill me once they find out I wrote this. But the public needs to know. Remember to follow Laura. And if you see one, aim for the center of the palm. That's your only chance. My new town is quiet. Too quiet. People are not as social here. I hate it, but my job pays better. And strangely enough, I feel like I've made better friends, despite how little anyone talks. I always watch for the signs. I'm careful. Red eyes can be excused. Everyone gets those once in a while. That's what I keep telling myself. But lately, I've noticed something. One of my new friends never takes off their shoes. Their arms are unusually long. They always wear long sleeves, even in the heat. I've only rarely seen their skin from the elbows down or the knees down. But their eyes are always red. Their arms and legs are completely hairless. They wear sunglasses indoors, and sometimes their voice slips. It's subtle, like something deep inside is pressing against the surface. I try to ignore it, telling myself I'm just traumatized, that I'm still healing. But there's something else. A patch on their backpack. I recognized it instantly. It was military, olive green, tattered at the edges. The exact patch my dad had sewn onto his old uniform. The same uniform I wore when I escaped. There's no way anyone else should have that. No way. I don't know how they got it. I never got that uniform back. I never thought to ask. Now I wish I had. I don't know how much longer I'll live. If you're reading this, keep a copy. If it gets taken down, you might not get another chance. It may be the only thing that saves your life. Remember, Lorha, trust your instincts. And if you ever get close enough to see its hand, aim for the center of the palm. And pray you're fast enough. That was Emergency Broadcast 101 by Trace Mousey. Listeners, I'll level with you. I don't know much about Trace Mousey. I found this story posted on Reddit under the username fearless_cucumber_10, and after our administration personnel secured licensing, all I was given was the story text and the author's name. Trace, your mysterious personage has piqued my interest. If it's piqued yours as well, listeners, go check out Trace's Reddit profile for a few other fun little horror romps. After all of the nightmare and bloodshed that tonight's episode has entailed, I am sorry to say that there is one further horror that I must now face. My drink is empty, and that once perky umbrella now looks tired and alone. Well, I suppose all things must eventually fall victim to the sands of time. Neither this banal yet tropical iconography, nor the organic eyes that enjoy seeing it will last forever, and all will finally decay into nothingness. Ah, summer! My thanks go out to Ross Tyson and Trace Mousey for tonight's stories. As always, there will be a freshly poured dose of Horror Hill ready for you next week, so I'll see you then. Until that time, listeners, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. Note that any writing utilizing artificial intelligence is ineligible. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media, and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started.
If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. That's ericpeabodyvoice. And we can talk details. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.